travels through a kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
Welcome along to Travels to a Kingdom. It's myself, Kaya Flynn, with you until 7 o'clock this evening, and I do hope you can keep me company on this beautiful Sunday evening. What a week we had weather-wise. Too hot to handle, as one would say. But how are you keeping with it? Did you get much done? There wasn't much you could do, really. There was a few bits. We went to the beach all right a few times. But like that, got sunburnt on the shoulders. So it wasn't a very... look, to be very honest with you all, I become awful cranky when it's too hot, so I'm no good in the hot weather in that regards. But how did you enjoy it? Did you go anywhere fun, or did you go to any beaches? What beaches did you go to? I did head out to Barrow with my friend after work one evening, and it was only my first time in Barrow. What a beautiful beach it is. It's really nice and private. By the time we had went there, the tide was in. So we walked around the corner and found a lovely quiet spot in the beach. And then by the time we came out, we stayed there until sunset. And the tide had gone out way farther anyway. And it was just absolutely magnificent. And geez, just going into the water after a day of work and going into the water and just getting your head in, you feel like a new person altogether. And I know Pat Kelly was off for his swims every evening as well after the afternoon show. And he said they were absolutely delightful as well. So let me know what beaches you got up to or got to this week here. We're on 083 300 3300 on text and WhatsApp, or you can email me kflynn@radiokerry.ie. Also here in Radio Kerry, we had our Sounds Countries with the Stars in the Teen Town Theatre in Ballybunion. And I met a few people in the audience as well. I go out to take a few pictures for our social media pages just to see who's enjoying it and whatnot. And it's just to share the memories of these special concerts as well. It's so good to have them back. And I just want to give a special shout out to Donal and Joan Healy, whom I asked to take a picture for our Facebook page. And they told me they're listeners of the show. So a big hello to them if they're listening. You might get in touch with me tonight just to let me know. But it was lovely to speak to you, and there were such lovely people as well. And like that as well, there was another man I spoke to and I didn't get his name. Of course I didn't. But if you're listening in as well and you know who I'm talking about, I took a picture of you too and you're on our Facebook page and I checked the comments, but your name isn't under it. You might send me a text in as well. But it was lovely to meet you all, and it's so nice as well when people are so kind and they say they tune in as well. So to everyone that does listen in, thank you very much. Now, on tonight's show, we are concentrating on wildlife with the experts. We'll be talking to Sam Bailey of Clarney Rangers about the crows and their background here in Ireland. And it's actually quite an interesting one if you are tuning in. Looking back on the archive with Sean Hurley, where he speaks to Edzo Crowley about Puck Fair. And I know there was a lot of talks about Puck Fair this week, but it's a nice, lovely little memory, and poems as well. And we'll be talking about our honeybees. Thomas O'Sullivan is a beekeeper here in Kerry, and we met last year when he took me to one of his apiaries and I got to see the setup he has for collecting honey. But it's never occurred to me the amount of work that goes into making that jar of honey that brings us so much nutrients and health as well. It's not easy work, and as Tom says, a good year for the bees and a good year for the beekeepers is not necessarily the same thing. So Tom tells us all about beekeeping.
Beekeeping is probably the job I should have done when I left school. But everything I've done after leaving school has helped in beekeeping. So any skills I picked up along the way has benefited me immensely in the beekeeping. The beekeeping year starts literally the end of August, where the honey is off. And the beekeeper's job is to prepare the bees for winter, to make sure they have enough of stores. The way we work it is we take off their surplus honey. And my first job after taking off the surplus honey is I go around and I weigh every single colony. And I have a target weight. And if they're short of that target, I feed them sugar syrup to bring them up to that target or just above. We then weigh them again in December to make sure that they're not short of stores again. And that way, and if they're short again, we put a solid block of sugar on them to make sure that they have enough to carry them through until the springtime and the flowers come again. A colony that starves out over the winter is the beekeeper's fault. There's very few excuses you can make for your colony starving to death over the winter. And a colony that starves to death over the winter will not make any honey for you the next year. So that's our number one priority. The next thing we do then throughout the winter is we monitor to make sure the lids aren't getting blown off. Just general housekeeping like that. And we have to treat for varroa mite, which is a parasite of the bees that came in. It's originally a parasite of the Asian bees, and they have tolerated it, but it jumped across species to the European bee, and the European bee struggles enormously with it. And not so much with the parasite, but with the viruses the parasite carries. Mm-hmm. And so we have to treat and monitor for that throughout the winter. Then in springtime, we check the colonies to make sure that they have a queen. The queen is laying, that there's nothing wrong, that the colony is building up. We do a bit of equalizing. So you have some colonies that are stronger than others, some colonies that are weak. And so you want to hold back the strong colonies a little bit, and you want to boost the weak colonies a little bit so that they all come up together. We then add more space and monitor, and we try and talk the bees out of swarming, because swarming is the bees' natural way of reproducing. A good year for the bees and a good year for the beekeeper are not necessarily the same thing. A good year for the bees is when they send out a couple of swarms and the swarms are successful and they establish more colonies. That's not a good year for the beekeeper, because these swarms that leave will bring you in no honey. So what we do is we implement some management styles that tell the bees, yes, you have swarmed, you have been successful, we split them. And once that is communicated, I guess indirectly, by splitting the bees, we pretty much fool them into thinking they have swarmed.
And how would you split them?
Bees are very interesting in that there is no difference between an egg that is laid to be a worker bee and an egg that's laid to be a queen bee. They're both fertilised eggs. Okay. A drone is an unfertilised egg. That drone is the male. The workers and the queen are all females.
Okay.
So a beekeeper can easily make more queens. So you take your colony, find your queen or not, there's management styles depending on which one you use, put your queen into a box with a certain amount of brood and bees, and then the other part of the colony, which will be brood and bees, they will quickly realise they don't have a queen, and they will start to select an egg or a larva, and they will raise that as a queen. And the way they raise the queen is they feed it differently. The egg the larva that's to be a queen is fed as much royal jelly, more royal jelly than the larva can eat.
Wow.
They are floated in it, literally. And they're fed that for the 5 days that they're a larva. And there's so much royal jelly put into the cell that the larva continues to feed on it after the cell is capped.
Right.
So the bees will, once they realise they're queenless, they will raise up another queen. And so then you have two colonies instead of one.
Very good. And how do you identify the queen from all the others?
After a while, the queen has a red mark, or a mark on her, but the beekeeper puts that mark on. So if you were ever at a show and you see a demonstration or an observation hive, and you can see the queen marching around with a colour on her, the beekeeper has put that on. The queen is not born with that mark, unfortunately. It's part of the corporate knowledge. You learn where the queen is likely to be in a colony. You examine the colony and you're looking for where there are eggs. So if you pull out a frame out of the colony and there's nothing on it, only honey, the queen is very unlikely to be there. Now you have to do as little disturbance to the colony as possible so that everything is as close to normal as possible, because you don't want to shoot too much smoke into them, because that'll cause the queen to run away from the smoke. So she'll run away from where she's normally going to be. So you try and keep everything as easy as possible, as gentle as possible, and you look for her. And she's slightly bigger, and what you're looking for, it's like you're looking for something different. You're not looking at all the bees. You're not going, is that a queen, is that a queen, is that a queen? Because there's 200 or 300 bees on the frame, and she'll have walked around the back by the time you've identified all the ones. So what you're doing is you're trying to pick out what's different, mm-hmm. you know. And when new beekeepers start looking for queens, a lot of the time they find drones and they give out to themselves. And that's actually the wrong thing to do. When they see the drone, that's something different. So they should be congratulating themselves. Okay, my eye picked out something different. I just have to look for a different something different. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's it's I suppose hit and miss a certain amount of the time. You can go through and the queen can be there sitting on top of the frame looking up at you going, here I am. Or you could go through the box and not find her.
Tom, tell us, what work goes into a jar of honey?
For the bees, an enormous amount. One bee in her entire life will collect 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey. So that's how much work the bees put into it. Mm-hmm. So for the beekeeper, it's managing the bees to try and stop them swarming. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest objective of your... Then if you can do that, and we can get a bit of weather, if we can get 2 weeks in June or July, we'll get a honey crop. Mm-hmm. And literally then it's a matter of stacking empty boxes for the bees to store the honey in on top, mm-hmm. and staying ahead of them and keeping on top of them and trying to stop them swarming. So once the bees bring in that nectar, the nectar comes in the high 90s moisture content. Mm-hmm. Honey is below 18% moisture content.
Okay.
So the bees have to bring all that moisture, get all that moisture out of it. And they do that by passive evaporation and by active evaporation. If you walk down any hedgerow in Kerry, in June and July, and you just start counting flowers.
Yeah.
Different. You don't have to name them, just count the different flowers and see how far you've gone before you get to 10. You won't have travelled that far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that all breeds into, it's better for the bees. They have a variety of pollens, mm-hmm. they're coming in for them. Now, pollens are more important to the bee than honey. Honey is only their carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
The pollens are their fats, their proteins, their amino acids. All their nutrients come from pollens. They should really be called pollen bees. They shouldn't be called honeybees. They're only called honeybees because that's what we get. Yeah, that's the primary thing we get from them.
Mm-hmm.
But that breeds into a better quality of honey, a better quality of life for the bees, a better life for the bees, mm-hmm. where they're not dragged from one pollinating one crop to pollinating the next crop to pollinating the next crop.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say rest of Ireland, of course, Kerry honey is without doubt the best in the world,
mm-hmm.
you know. And
and speaking of Kerry honey,
yes,
tell us about your own honey.
Our own honey, I'm originally from Ballymac, so, and my wife is from Banna. So we have a foot in both camps. We have a foot in both sides of Tralee. So we're called this side then, with the Centra in Ardfert, Clifford's in Ardfert, Spa Seafoods, Lerig, who were our first store, they really encouraged us. We weren't supplying to shops at all until Lurig approached us and said, come on, you know, we'll...
So you had really good support.
Oh, huge support from the shops are fantastic support. Yeah, they've trained us up. Like, I'm beekeeping since on and off since 1977. But supplying to stores and things like that is a new experience, and having to, you know, do statements of accounts. They're really good.
Tom, when I met you last year, and this is my final question, I asked you, what is it like having a spoon of honey from real honey locally versus a spoon of honey that you get from...
Well, the a lot of the imported honey, okay, won't have the medicinal benefits that local honey will. A lot of it comes from monocultures, so a lot of it will come from oilseed rape, sunflowers, other crops like that. So you're getting just the benefits of whatever those crops are. Whereas the Kerry honey, and any beekeeper, you'd go to my mentor Pat Connor in Killarney honey, any of those, you know, they'll all have local honey. It'll contain local pollens. Now, it'll contain minute amounts of local pollens that the bees, the wind pollinated plants, the bees pick it up, and as they're flying, it gets incorporated into the honey. So if you're eating local honey throughout the winter, you're getting the minutest doses of local pollens, which the medical people tell me that's the way they overcome people's allergic reactions to things. They give them the minutest dose of what they're allergic to, and they build that up over time. So if you have an allergy to pollens, eat local honey. It will help you in but you have to eat it constantly. You have to eat it forever.
A spoon a day.
A spoon a day, yes.
Very good.
A spoon a taste of summer, one spoon at a time, every day.
Very good. Tom, finally, what is the best way to have your honey?
Oh, the best way to have your honey is the teaspoon. A teaspoon into your mouth with nothing else. But the way I have it is a shovel full in my porridge every morning. But that's my own honey, and I can do it that way.
And that was Thomas O'Sullivan, who is a beekeeper just outside Artfort, and telling us what his favourite way to have his own honey as well. And I met Tom today, and he gave me two jars of his honey, so I'm just going to smell it. Oh, definitely smells like honey anyway, but it's absolutely magnificent. And everyone should have a jar of local honey inside their own homes, because like that, it's not scientifically proven, but it definitely helps if bees are pollinating around the area and stuff like that, that you're getting the pollen into your system. And I suppose it's just building up that immune system towards it as well. And just like I asked Tom there at the end of the interview, what is your favourite way to have your honey? Is it in in your bowl of porridge like Tom does, or in a spoon? Just put it back. I know if we ever had a sore throat at home, it was the spoon of honey, but we'd nearly tell each other, oh, my throat's fine, never mind. Or is it in your tea or anything like that? What is your way to have honey? Do let us know. You can text us on 083 300 3300 on text and WhatsApp there as well. And I met Tom today, as I was saying, and his wife Lily at the Mickey J. Kavanagh expedition in Artfort today as well, and we'll be bringing you pieces from that as well for next week's programme. It was absolutely magnificent. I can't get the word out of my mouth, that's how good it was, but it was definitely worth going to, and I know it got a great attraction as well as that. So we bring you some clips from that on next week's programme as well. But do let us know what way is your favourite way to have your honey, and we'll come back to those after we take these.
Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
You are, and it's nearly, well, it's 25 to 7 now here on this. Well, I did say at the beginning of the show it was a lovely Sunday evening, but it's all cloudy here in Tralee, so it must be the same around the county. I know thunderstorms and whatnot are on the way as well, which is nothing worse when there's thunderstorms in the hot weather, because you can't put on a coat because you feel so sticky. Oh, I can't express the feeling I get, but like that, as I was saying, I get just awful cranky in this weather. I'm not used to it at all. And every evening I actually came home from work this week, I went at home, I made a cup of tea. Yes, I made tea in this very hot weather, and I just stayed out the side of the garden for hours just because it was just so nice and cool there because of the trees, and then the cats are playing around and whatnot. So it was absolutely blissful. But yeah, I'm no good in the heat. And Charles actually got in touch there, and he said, very interesting hearing all about the bees and making honey. I like the heat, but Friday and Saturday were the hottest I've ever experienced in a long time. But it's okay if you don't have to work in it. My sister gets very cranky in the heat. She'd be like a wasp. Yeah, I was like a wasp. I went to visit my aunt yesterday at her house, and I think I was only there 20 minutes. And I said, I have to go. I can't stick this heat. So I just left, and like that, I stayed in the garden for the rest of the evening as well. Hi, Kaya. Hope you had a lovely weekend. Spent the weekend in beautiful Ballybunion Beach. Beach yoga in the morning and kayaking in the evening. Felt like I was on holidays. From Niamh. Oh, Niamh, that does sound amazing. I don't think I've been kayaking since when I was in first year. So that was about 10 years ago. But it's something I actually would love to start doing again. It's really nice, and it's just so peaceful as well. And obviously it's very safe anyway, because I can't swim. But once you have the life jackets and you can float, then you're all okay as well. Thanks for getting in touch, Niamh. I appreciate that as well. Thanks for the mention on your show tonight, Kai. It was lovely to meet you in Ballybunion on Wednesday night, from Donal and Joan Healy in Listellick. Thank you very much again for getting in touch, Donal and Joan. And Listellick is a place I still haven't gone to here on Travis True Kingdom, but there's plenty of time yet for that. If there's anything going on the aesthetic, do let me know, of course. Okay, we'll get back to some of your comments in just a few moments. But now, I am very interested in birds, and I love seeing them around in the garden, and their little songs in the morning are something I think we all take for granted. I think anyways. But one bird we always have around, but I feel bad saying this, but you nearly hate to see them, is the crow. And for a lot of people, crows are absolute pests. I find them very annoying when I put out the seeds out for our little birds, and the crows take them all. But there's a purpose for every animal here on Earth, and I wanted to learn a bit more about the crows and what exactly their story is here. So I met with Sam Bailey of the Killarney Rangers to talk all about crows with me. And firstly, Sam discusses the different types of crows that we have here in Ireland.
The crows are a very exciting family and have a lot of dynamics to them. So we'll start from the smallest. And the smallest is the jackdaw. It's quite a common bird, and we see it nests. They like nesting in cavities in trees or old buildings. You know, quite often see them in sort of old tower houses and castles and things like that. But they'll also nest down chimneys. So you sometimes get them going down, sort of using a chimney as a nest hole. So they're our smallest, and they're all black, and they've got a grey band going around the back of their head. And then the next one up from that is the magpie. Most people will know the magpie. It's and very easily identified. They have a long tail, and they're black and white. Really stand out. So you've got the magpies, and then next up from that is a rarer one called the chough. And the chough is got, it's all black. But it's got red legs, and it's got a long curved red bill, and they're mainly coastal. So certainly, sort of around Kerry and Cork, and it's the major population of them in Ireland. And they're mainly around the coast, but sometimes, nesting in sea cliffs. But they sometimes also are breeding a bit further inland than we used to think they did, and will be nesting in buildings, old buildings, and things like that sometimes. Okay. So, and they're a bit rarer. And then the next one up from that would be the hooded crow. Now, the hooded crow, or also known as the grey crow, has got a sort of mainly grey body, but it's got a black head, black tail, black wings, and a bit of a black bib down the front of it. And they're very clever birds. They're probably the cleverest of our crows. And they nest singly, so they have one nest in a tree, quite high up. They keep themselves very quiet, very clever, very secretive, thinking all the time. They're the real thinking bird. And traditionally they would have been much more coastal. And sort of feeding in our estuaries and, you know, sort of picking up scraps and things like that. But over time, they've spread across most of the mainland now as well. And then next one up from that is probably our commonest crow is the rook, which most people call the crow. And the rook, it's all black, and the adults have a bare patch of skin at the base of their bill, which looks white. It looks very, very white all around the base of the bill. And they're the guys that you see often walking through the streets, you know, sort of trying to follow you around. You know, you might have some food on you or something. And they nest as a group. So you'll get a whole group of rooks nesting together. You might have like a group of trees, and there'll be like 20 or 30 nests or something, or more even. I think there's been some colonies up to 200 nests.
Wow. In
colonies.
In
one group of trees.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. And a group of rooks are called a rookery. So a rookery is a group of nests in a tree. Yeah. And they generally are, you know, sort of insect feeders, so they'll feed on insects and stuff, but they will scavenge as well. They'll find, you know, things mm-hmm. that, you know, other things that are interesting, especially from us, because we're good at providing food.
Yeah. Well, the main reason why I want to do this piece is because crows are everywhere.
Yeah.
I live in Castlemaine, but around the Milltown area, there is so many crows, and you just kind of wonder, what's their game here? What do they want here? Mm. But as you were saying to me earlier, they've come to adapt with people because they know that we provide food. So how has this kind of happened over the years?
Well, I think part of it has happened because we've got... So we've actually had a huge reduction in predators, you know. So we haven't got sort of a lot of our aerial predators that we used to have in years and years past. You know, we're starting to get a few of them back. But so there was nothing to sort of... No apex predator above them. So and that would have helped them to a degree, because they'd have had a lot more, you know, sort of ability to do stuff without getting clobbered for it. and also our farming landscape, a lot of our farming landscape is really well set up for them. You know, they're opportunists. They make opportunities where they can. They're quite generalist feeders. A lot of them. Some of them, are, you know, will feed on other dead things as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you'll see that, especially like a roadkill on the road, you'll often see magpies come down to it. You'll often see hooded crows come down to it. And the one other species I didn't mention was the raven, which is our biggest one. They sometimes will as well, but they're a bit more scarce. So ravens are you know, absolutely massive. They're sort of really big birds, really big birds. Again, are all black. But as I say, a lot of these guys are very opportunists, so they'll make the most of whatever they can, and they're very clever. So they live for, you know, these guys live for like up to 30 odd years.
Really?
Yeah. So that length of time they have a long time to learn. Quite a few of them don't survive the first winter, like a lot of birds. You know, their first, when they leave the nest, the first winter is the hardest. They've got a lot to learn to get to adult, you know, to. Mm. The way the life of the world, you know, to learning the way of the world and stuff. So quite a few don't survive that first year, but once they reach adulthood, they generally live for a good length of time. So, you know, I think that jackdaws are known to reach sort of 25, 30 years old.
Wow.
You know, ravens are sort of similar. And again, you know, sort of all that family are, you know, known to live quite a decent length of time.
And would that be around the same area, or was that, you know, kind of moving throughout the years?
So they don't move very far at all. So when they leave the nest, so a chick leaves the nest, it will probably move a short distance away, maybe, you know, sort of... 10, 20 kilometres, you know, sort of at most. But once it finds its place as being an adult, it will generally stay in that area for the rest of its life. Mm-hmm. So they're not migratory like our, you know, some of our other species, like swallows that go off to the other side of the world and then come back again. These guys stay.
Yeah.
And they get to know their area very well. They get to know their opportunities. They'll have, you know, areas which they go to regularly to feed and shelter. And they'll tend to have the same nest site. They're also incredibly... faithful to each other. So, you know, they will have the same partner for years and years and years and years and years. Even if they mix in, like with the rooks, they mix in all together, but they'll have the same partners, you know. So, you know, they can be very, you know, monogamous like that. They'll be, you know, sort of very focused.
And would they have a lot of chicks in that sense?
Yeah, so they generally only have sort of between 3 to 4 chicks in a nest for all of these species, you know. So they're not huge. I mean, things like the blue tits can have up to 10 chicks, you know, in a nest. But they don't live very long, so they've got to get them out there, and a lot of those ones won't survive. So they need to have a lot of chicks to make sure you have enough to survive. Whereas the crows, because they live so long, they don't have to have a huge amount of chicks in each nesting attempt. As long as they get enough over the whole length of their life, then it's okay, you know, then they're going to survive. But they take quite a long time to actually reach adulthood as well with the crows. So it might take them, you know, sort of 3 or 4 years before they reach age of being able to breed.
Okay.
So if you think about it, you know, although it although they live for quite a long time, that there's a good chunk of their first part of their life where they're not able to provide, you know, provide any young to supplement themselves.
And is there any specific reason for that, or...?
They just have a long process. They're big birds, but they actually come from a group of birds which are generally quite small. So they, you know, they're what are called the passerines. They're the largest birds within the group of the birds called the passerines, which are the small perching birds. So things like blue tits are passerines, robins, blackbirds. You know, a lot of our common birds, they're the passerines, they're the small bird. Whereas the crows are still part of that. They're songbirds. They're part of that group. But they've evolved to be this sort of bigger format, so it just everything takes a bit longer for them to develop and sort of learn those skills and stuff. So,
interesting.
But they're incredibly clever, and because everything's a bit slower, they live a bit longer.
My last question is about the magpie. Okay.
Okay.
A lot of people say you see one magpie, it's bad luck. Two, it's good luck. Is it three for marriage, or...?
It depends on who you speak to.
Where did that come from?
So I'm obviously from England, and we have a slightly different rhyme, you know. So the rhymes different change, I think, into different, you know, areas. You know, one for sorrow, two for joy. We have one for sorrow, two for joy, three for a baby, four for a boy.
Okay.
You know, and that's always the song I remember from a kid, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas you know, sort of other you get sort of regional versions of it, you know. So
I suppose if I ever saw a singular magpie, I was like, no, I didn't.
I know some people, you know, sort of, you know, do the cross, and do the blessing, or, you know, see a single magpie or whatever. It's a funny thing. I don't know. You know, a lot of our culture and stuff, you know, sort of does, you know, sort of come around to some of the things that we're seeing regularly in our environment. Mm-hmm. So magpies have become this thing, you know, you sort of can't cross a magpie, you know. We talk about, you know, jackdaws and magpies they like shiny things and things like that.
Yeah, is
that
true?
You know, it can be sometimes. And you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's an interest thing, or it's a food related thing, or but it's not always necessary bright shiny things. I think we notice the bright shiny things. I did actually have a jackdaw nest once, which was covered in cigarette butts. And it was just this one that had taken a, you know, obviously it was something that was common to the area it was nesting, and it would be picking up, and it was like decorating, trying to decorate its nest, you know, trying to make it look interesting, you know. So and it was picking up all these fag butts, and it was like, oh my god, you know, that's you know. So so you do get certain bits like that. And you know, sort of, you know, sort of have they do build traits and things, you know, into what they do. And I think it's anything that you have that lives for such a long time, they build up, you know, sort of
a reputation.
Yeah. And have a bit of idea of different ideas of what they want to do with it, you know. So they are fascinating creatures, and you can spend a long time watching them.
Yeah.
You know, it can get you sit out in a park and you start watching the rooks, especially in the springtime, early spring, sort of, you know, February time, and you see the males, and they've got these long feathers that stick down on their legs, look like they're wearing flares, you know, and they're strutting around, and they're making all these amazing sort of vocal noises and stuff, and they have a just a stunning language. Mm-hmm. All of the crows, they have a lot of very different noises that they can make. Mm-hmm. When they're trying to impress each other, and you know, so.
Well, I suppose what you would get from this is that they're not pets at the end of the day. They may seem it, and they are very annoying when I put out the birdseed for the small birds, and they're at it, but they all have their purpose in these environments.
They do, very much so. And you know, sort of anything can be a pest to some degree. You know, it's trying to find a way that, of living around them, or, you know, sort of trying to, you know, sort of, you know, we haven't got as much of a extensive wildlife as some other countries in Europe. And interestingly, something like the rook in Spain, it's an absolute rarity. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, they have one colony of rooks in all of Spain.
Wow.
And they're so heavily protected, and they look after them, and they're studied, and they're, you know, and they know more about that little patch of rooks than we know about any of ours.
Wow.
Because they're so common, we don't nothing. Research them very much, you know. So it's amazing, just a short distance away, and you think, oh my, you know, how, you know. So they get really excited about rooks in Spain.
Wow.
whereas over here we're like,
oh wait.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was Sam Bailey of the Clare New Rangers speaking to us all about crows here on Travis True Kingdom. And I can't believe crows can live up to 30 years. That's amazing, really. I suppose you never really think of these things or how long a bird or anything like that lasts. But it's absolutely fascinating like that. And the whole thing of seeing a singular crow and you think, oh, bad luck, two crows, good luck, I should do the lotto. Where does that come from? But that's just one of us. That's an Irish thing, isn't it? Completely. But I hope you did enjoy that extract about the crows and what we didn't know about the crows as well. But like that, every animal has its purpose here on Earth, and they were given to us for a reason. Someone got in touch to say, I love a spoon of honey mixed with natural yogurt. It's divine. I don't like natural yogurt, but I'll take your word for it. I don't really like yogurt in general, actually. Hi Kaya, honey is lovely on brown soda bread or on toast, both with butter. Charles, honey on bread, I've never heard of it before, but look, it's a new one for me as well. I suppose I don't have honey that much, but now I suppose it's important to try all these things as well. Good evening Kaya, tuned in the stool. Hate the hot weather. Was on a week off from work, stayed in Cork and Dublin, and that was from Patrick as well. Thank you very much, Patrick. And John got in touch to say, I went to Inch Beach on Wednesday and it was beautiful. The water was so warm, Kaya. Great to get a day on the beach in that special weather as well. Oh, you're so right, John. We should take the beach as much as we can in that sense, but as I said, no good in the hot weather. All right, we need to take a break, but we'll be back with the archive of Sean Hurley after these.
Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.
And you're very welcome back to this evening's Travels Through a Kingdom. Now it's time to revisit the archive of Sean Hurley. And this week's piece comes from when Sean spoke to Edzo Crowley from Killorglan and recites a poem about Puck Fair.
Now with Puck Fair coming up in 6 days' time, we join Edzo Crowley, who has many memories himself.
Well, I suppose really, and there's a story told actually about a person who was in England for a long number of years one time. It's a kind of a well-known story around here. And when he was asked the question of how long are you over here in England now, the answer he gave was a kind of a stock reply. He says, next Puck, he says, I'll be here 26 of them. In other words, he mapped off the years in terms of Puck's missed. So obviously the reunions are a big factor. Like, people always come home, and if they're not able to come home, no matter what part of the world they're in, you can be sure their heart and their mind are in Killarney on the 10th, 11th and 12th of August. I have a small little bit of an old poem I wrote myself there to encapsulate what the town of Killarney means to me. It goes as follows. There's a small little town called Killarney with a hill for a heart that is high. The loun is the blood that runs through it, a river both noble and shy. For it comes and it goes and it's living. It rises and falls with each tide. And its people are known to be giving and welcome each one to its side. For it stands at the gateway to beauty, South Kerry, a place that is known for its bogs, its lakes and its mountains, and its voice that keeps calling you home. For when you are away over the ocean, in some concrete cage you are enclosed, 'tis then you'll be picked by the notion, 'tis back you will wish for repose. So people, wherever you're happy, wherever your roots you put down, just think of our dear little hamlet by the dear darling banks of the Loun, and remember going down life's long highway, when the road closes in and you're tired, just think of Puck Fair and its people, and once more you will sure be inspired.
Edzo Crowley, thank you. Enjoy the week ahead.
And whatever happens, gentlemen, down there in Killoglan, keep the old Puck Fair going, because I'd hate to think what our loss would be in the county and in Killoglan town if it had to disappear. Keep up the good work.
And that was the archive of the lovely Sean Hurley from Kerry White, this reciting about Puck Fair as well and what it means to the town of Killoglan. And it had a great turnout this year for a lot of reasons and like that. We went the first day all right. It was very hot. Again, couldn't handle it. I had to go home. But it was absolutely magnificent that we have our festivals back. And this time next week, we'll have the Rose of Tralee. So, you know, time flies. You know, we were here expecting, planning the Rose of Tralee there a couple of months ago. And just like that, it's happening already. So there'll be great excitement here in the town of Tralee. And that's it for today. Nice Travels Through a Kingdom. I want to say a big thank you to Thomas and Lily O'Sullivan, and we'll be hearing from Lily next week on Travels Through a Kingdom regarding the Mickey J. Cavan expedition, which was on in our fair today. And again, hats off to all that got involved with that. It was absolutely brilliant and I can't wait to bring that back to you. And to Sam Bailey of the Clarny Rangers, and for you listening and getting in touch tonight. Our show will be podcasted on our website and Spotify, and if you share and follow those as well, that would be great. If there's anywhere you'd like me to venture out for Travels Through a Kingdom, you can let me know by emailing me kflynn@radiokerry.ie. I'd love to see what more things and what is about here in our county. So make sure you do stay listening to us here on Radio Kerry. We have news at 7, and then Elaine is on with 7 days, and then the great Sean Riley is on, which is Irish Favourites. So I think I might head off for a 99 while the evening is some bit warm, but I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
You're listening to Travels Through a Kingdom on Radio Kerry with Kaya Flynn.